You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 4th of October 2021, and you're listening to me, Sam Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, after the Radio Albion Roundtable last week, where we were discussing new information that has come to light about cannabis and the push to legalise cannabis everywhere, we have similar things going on in Scotland now. They are not giving out cautions anymore. They're just giving out a warning so people don't get a criminal record if they get caught with drugs. And this week we have the accusation that the drugs laws themselves are racist. The UK's laws on drugs are racist as they disproportionately harm black communities, a former advisor to the government has said. Lord Woolley, who previously chaired the government's race disparity unit, said drugs legislation introduced 50 years ago continues to be used as a tool of systemic racism. What does he mean here? Does he mean that the police are only going after black people and they're ignoring white people that get caught with drugs? I can't believe that. If we have a look at actually what the difference is here, and we can go to the government's own website for this. In 2017, and that's the most recent results that we actually have, in 2017 there were 6,245 convictions for drug offences in the black community, while there were 19,828 in the white community. And of course you would expect there to be more convictions in the white community because the white community is much larger than the black community. The black community actually only makes up 3% of the population, while the white community make up 85% of the population, according to the last census. Now, there were 30,978 drugs offences in all. So that means the black drug offences make up roughly 20% of all drug offences. So since they are only 3% of the population, they should really just be 3% of all drug offences, all things being equal. But instead, they make up 20% of all the drugs offences. That means that they are responsible for over six times as many drugs offences as their percentage of the population. So instead of pointing that out, instead of pointing out that it looks like black people are more likely to use drugs than other people, they're saying that the legislation itself must be racist. It's a tool of systemic racism. Now, we know that black people are more likely to be in prison than white people anyway. We do know that they have a higher conviction rate for all offences. I mean, it recently came out in America that 56% of all the murders in America are carried out by people in the black community. And yet they only make up something like 13% of the population of America. And the majority of the people that are actually murdered by them are other black people. I mean, it's quite a sorry state of affairs, the amount of murder that goes on within the black community. But we can see from this that they are more predisposed to carry out crimes than the other races are. And that is just a fact. And when you learn that, it doesn't make you think, well, I should be hating black people. That's what I'm being told here. Because they have a higher crime rate, I should hate them. That's nonsense. The reason why we have to face up to this fact is so that we can try to protect the other peoples. And I mean, it would be so much better if if black people are going to be more likely to take drugs, and if they are going to be more likely to commit crimes, then wouldn't it make more sense for black people to be policed by other black people? And then they would not be able to make this accusation that the law is being racist against them. They would not be able to say that, because it would be, they would be being policed by the black community. I mean, that is the way to solve this. If they're going to say that the drugs laws are racist, and the prison system and the system of law is racist, then the way to solve that is just to have black community, have segregated communities. And then we can see if it's still racist. And of course, that would prove that the law isn't racist, and that the fact of the matter is that they are a different race. Your eyes are not deceiving you. These people are different to us, and they're not just physically different. They also have a different temperament to us. They have different things that they're good at, and they have different things that they're bad at. And they are more likely to make decisions based on how they feel at the time, rather than thinking about the consequences of their actions. And this is predicted by the average IQ that they have. They have a different average IQ to us. The races are just different. And this idea that all the races are exactly the same and everybody is exactly the same is the cause of so many problems in our society. And you can't blame black people for claiming this and that it is racism that's causing it, because it's going to be to their benefit, isn't it, if they say that, because they're then going to be able to get concessions out of white people for something that basically can't be changed anyway. So the best way to deal with this, that would be best for black people and best for white people, would just be segregation. There's nothing horrible about that. I mean, why would anybody think it horrible to have to live among their own people? Surely that's the default position. You're brought up among your own people, in your family, when you're a child, and that's when you feel the safest, is when you're around your family, or at least that should be so. And the extension from that is that you're going to feel safest, and you're going to feel most comfortable, and you're going to feel most at home among your own people. I mean, when we go abroad and we're in a foreign country, and we hear somebody else that is speaking the same language as us, most of the time we will smile, or we might go over, or we might say hello. And that's because we understand that they are the same as us, and we're in a country of a different people. Whereas when we're at home and we're in our own country, perhaps because we hear people that are speaking our language all the time, people that are like us all the time, we don't go over and introduce ourselves and say hello. But that, the reason why we do that when we're in foreign countries is because we have this sense of solidarity with our own people, and we feel safest among our own people. And blacks should feel safest among their own people. I mean, it may be that they are more crime prone, but they are going to be more aware of the sort of things that set criminal behaviour off, aren't they? They're going to be more aware of the sort of things that they shouldn't say if they don't want somebody to get violent. They're going to be more aware of how protective they should be over things if they don't want stuff to be stolen. They're just going to be more used to it than other races are, who may not have such a high propensity for crime, especially if you look at the Chinese and if you look at the Asians. I mean, when I was looking at these drug offences, Asians, Chinese, they make up the least number of drugs convictions, and they make up the least number of crimes. So they're not used to living in a society where they have to guard themselves against crime. I mean, most white people aren't used to, or they didn't used to be used to living in a society that has to guard against crime. So all of this is really caused by this policy of multiculturalism. That's what causes these problems. It is multiculturalism. It is not that the drugs legislation is racist. It's not that the police are being racist or the court system are being racist. It's just that there are differences between the races, and multiculturalism has caused this problem where we refuse to accept reality for what it is, and we tell ourselves that our eyes are deceiving us. Well, continuing with this article here, the crossbench peer added that the laws have failed to reduce the use, supply and harms associated with illegal drugs, and is calling for a review on whether the Misuse of Drugs Act is fit for purpose. And he does have a good point here. The so-called war on drugs has just seen a huge increase in this. And the problem is, if you did have them legal, the usage of it would probably go up. And I'm not so concerned about the use of hard drugs. I think it would be better for people that have heroin addictions. I think it would be better for them to receive medical heroin so that they weren't forced to buy it on the streets. They weren't forced to have to inject. I think that would be better all round. And I don't think anybody would think, well, let's try this. I think I'm going to take this up, because that would eliminate the need for dealers to be selling it to make a profit to cover their own habits. I mean, why would anybody take up taking heroin? And why would anybody be trying to encourage somebody to do that if it was legally provided for people on the NHS? So I don't have such a problem with that. But I do think if they were to legalize cannabis, we would end up with a lot more young people taking it. And I think it robs people of their ambition. I really do. Which you would have to weigh up against this, the problems that are caused by young people being caught with cannabis. So it may be that it would be better for it to be legalized, but then you would have to have a lot of propaganda within societies saying that it was not a good idea to do, especially not when you're young, when your brain is still growing. I mean, we know that it causes a drop in IQ. We know that it is more likely to give you heart attacks. We know that it is more likely to give you schizophrenia. This sort of stuff would have to be promoted. And perhaps if it was legalized and the sense of danger was taken away from it, then young people wouldn't see it as something rebellious to do. And perhaps they wouldn't do it anymore because they saw it as part of the establishment. So there are lots of different parts to this that need to be looked into before they make any changes, I think. A Home Office spokesperson said the government's approach to the matter will continue to strike a balance between controlling the harmful substances that cause so much harm whilst enabling appropriate access to drugs for legitimate purposes. And I guess also that comes into this is the medical marijuana and the people that need cannabis preparations for their illnesses, and they should most certainly get them. I mean, it is the people that need medical marijuana that have been hurt the most by this legislation that basically put the drug beyond the reaches of being used by the medical establishment, which seems a little bit crazy when you think things like diamorphine, which is essentially heroin, is available through the medical establishment, but cannabis isn't. There have been some moves to get legal medical marijuana in Britain. Apparently you can get it now, but I think you have to get it with a private prescription, which costs an absolute fortune. And a lot of the people that need it are children with epilepsy and things like that. It's scandalous, really, that people that need it for medical reasons can't get hold of it. At least if they were to decriminalise cannabis, then they would be able to buy it that way, wouldn't they? They would be able to, at least they would be assured of the fact that they're not going to get arrested for something that they need for medical purposes. Lord Woolley says a review must consider the growing evidence that decriminalising people who take drugs and legally regulating drug supplies could be beneficial. And I think it would be beneficial in that way, that people wouldn't end up with they wouldn't end up involved with the criminal justice system. The drugs themselves would be clean. People would know what they were actually buying. The money that they spent would go back into the system. But then that really does have to be weighed up with the increase that would take place, an increase in the people that were taking them. As I say, I don't think you would see an increase if they were to provide medical heroin to heroin users. I think that would get rid of the heroin problem outright. but the legalization of things like cannabis probably would cause an increase in taking it. So you just have to weigh that up. Is that going to cause more damage to people than the criminal justice system? And I guess probably it would be better to legalize it. But as I say, we would have to have a frank talk about it. People would have to, people that used to use drugs would have to talk to the people that are thinking about taking them today and be honest about the downside to it. Writing in the British Medical Journal, the peer says that current drugs laws fail black communities in particular. And I guess what he means by fail is that black communities in particular break this law. And I guess the problem is, if people are dependent on something, then they're dependent on it in order to function. And if the law is saying, well, you can't take this, well, that means that they can't function. So you've also got that problem as well. I think the main problem with drug use in the black communities is crack cocaine, which really, I mean, you couldn't really provide that on the NHS. And the problem that they have is with cannabis. It's not because the laws themselves are being racist, though. It's just because they have a higher propensity for taking those two drugs in particular than white people do. Lord Woolley says the UK's laws on drugs are one of the most tangible and damaging means through which systemic racism is experienced in black communities. Well, how can it be racist? It's not racism. It's not that the law was designed in order to discriminate against black people because it didn't like the colour of their skin. What it is that blacks are more likely to take drugs than the other communities. Why is it that we just cannot face up to some people being more likely to do things and other people being less likely to do things? We don't look at the fact that it's mainly men that are in prison and say, well, that means that the laws are discriminating against men. We should get rid of all these laws that end up putting more men in prison than women. But we say that would be ludicrous. It's not that the law is discriminating against men. And yet when it comes down to anything that involves black and minority ethnic communities, we say, well, it must be racism that is causing this. It's absolutely insane that we go along with this. He goes on to describe stop and search tactics and strip searches as profound dehumanization. And I would go along with that, but a lot of the stop and search is there to prevent people from having weapons. It's not necessarily about drugs. The peer, who has experienced both of the above measures himself, the peer himself is black, said you are stripped bare and have to crudely show that you have nothing hidden anywhere. The sense of being both powerless and humiliated instills anger and deep distrust in not only law enforcement, but also the authorities that sanction it. And I guess, obviously, black people are more likely to be stop and searched. But the reason why they are more likely to be stop and searched is because they're six times more likely to have drugs on them, as we learned from the figures earlier. That's the reason for why there is this discrepancy. It isn't that the police are saying, well, we don't like the colour of your skin. It's because they know that they're more likely to get a conviction if they stop and search somebody who is black. They're six times more likely to get a conviction if they do. And the police are supposed to get as many convictions as they can. So it's not racism, but obviously the result of this is that the black people that have been stop and search, they then have a grudge against the white establishment. This is why I say you wouldn't have this problem if this black peer, if he had been stop and searched by a black police officer within a black community that had black judges and a black legal system, then he wouldn't be able to say that it was racism that caused this, would he? He would have to say, well, it's just the fact that our community is more likely to take drugs. And then he could campaign to get the law changed on that and say, well, it's unrealistic to have these drugs laws because we have so many of our community that actually use them. And that would be a lot more honest and a lot more truthful than trying to blame white people for this. I mean, that's essentially what they're doing when they say that it's down to racism and that the law is racist. They're saying it's white people's fault. It's white people's fault that black people take more drugs than white people. It comes as drug-related deaths in England and Wales rose for the 8th year in a row in 2020, according to the Office for National Statistics. Other figures show Scotland continues to have the worst drug rate in Europe. So clearly the policies that we have are not working. And some people would say, well, why don't we have it like Rodney Duterte in the Philippines? Why don't they just go out there and shoot all the drug dealers? I don't think that would solve the problem. You would still have people that were selling drugs. It would just put the price up. And if the price went up that high, there would be lots more crime that was needed to actually pay for it. That sort of thing may work in the Philippines, but it wouldn't work here. And a lot of the people that are actually selling the drugs are forced into doing it to pay for their own drug habit or their own drug dependency, which would be solved if it was available on the NHS for them. A Home Office spokesman said illegal drugs blight our communities and ruin lives. Our whole system approach, informed by Dame Carol Black's review, will drive down drug supply and demand by cracking down on the criminals pushing dangerous and illegal drugs, while at the same time addressing the issues that fuel demand. This approach will continue to strike a balance between controlling the harmful substances that cause so much harm, whilst enabling appropriate access to drugs for legitimate purposes. So the government are basically, or the Home Office are basically just repeating what they always say. But it may be that it is because of this difference in the ratio of blacks that are convicted for drugs, the difference in the ratio between them and the white convictions, that is the cause of this legalizing of drugs. It seems there's nothing that they won't try to change if someone makes the accusation that it's racist. If there is a difference in the outcomes between whites and blacks, then they're going to call it racist and try to abolish it, aren't they? Well, we've got some good news from the Home Office as well. It appears, maybe they've been listening to Radio Albion because they have come up with the same idea that we have promoted for the last few years here to solve the problem of illegal immigrants, and that is to set up a new processing centre for them in another country. Migrants who arrive in the UK after crossing the Channel in small boats will be flown 1,500 miles to a new processing centre in Albania as part of a new crackdown on illegal immigration. And this is a great idea. This is what they did in Australia, and this stopped all the illegal immigration into Australia. Under radical Home Office proposals, those making the treacherous journey from France to claim asylum in Britain would be detained in the Balkans while their claims are handled by UK authorities. Would they actually have to fly them there? I mean, I guess they could put them on boats. Wouldn't that be cheaper? I guess they have to work it out. But the point is, this would take away this incentive that the fake asylum seekers have for trying to get into Britain. All the while they think that as soon as they set foot on Britain, that's it. They're never going to get sent back. They are going to keep coming. If they realise that if they get here, they will then be sent to Albania, where they will be safe from war and all the other things that they're claiming asylum from, then they're not going to try and come to Britain, are they? Because the whole point of them coming to Britain is because they think that they're going to be better off here in Britain than in other countries that actually offer asylum. I guess the problem with this is that they're calling it a new processing centre. So basically they're just going to hold these illegal immigrants in Albania until they have processed them, instead of putting them up in hotels in Britain. And what they should really be doing is setting up an asylum camp for asylum seekers in Albania. So that's their final destination. If they're claiming asylum and they're saying that they're being mistreated in their home over the other side of the world, in Afghanistan or Iran or somewhere in Africa, and they say that the place is at war and we're in danger, then they could be put somewhere in Albania in a camp that is not at war, and they could have their food taken care of. They could have their medical needs taken care of. And then when the warlike situation calms down in their home country, then they can go back there. I mean, surely that is the point of asylum, isn't it? You're supposed to just claim asylum in somebody else's country because conditions are too bad in your own country at the time. As soon as the conditions are better in your own country, you're supposed to go back there. This isn't supposed to be about moving around the world searching for a better life. This is supposed to be avoiding dangerous circumstances in your own country. So although this is a good idea and it might put some of them off, it still gives them that hope of actually making it to Britain, because this is just going to be a processing centre rather than a final destination. What they need to do is set up a final destination, an asylum camp that they can put these fake asylum seekers in. And they are fake because there is no war in France. They have crossed through multiple countries to actually get to Britain. Officials in London and the Albanian capital Tirana are understood to be close to agreeing a deal on the new centre, according to The Sun. Home Secretary Priti Patel said that she hopes the new measures will deter people from making the crossing after the number of migrants detained by border force hit record highs this year. I think it will deter some of them, but not nearly enough, really, because all they're saying is, instead of putting you up in a hotel, we're going to put you up in Albania. I guess it does make it easier to not fly them back from Albania to Britain, but they're still going to have the hope that they're going to be able to make it to Britain if they throw away their passport and all the rest of it and claim that they came from a country that was in awful conditions and it's not likely to get better, or if they claim that they have relatives in Britain and that's the reason why they want to be here and it's their human right to be with their relatives, they will still be able to get away with it. Figures show the number of migrants detained by border force crossing the Channel reached 16,299 by September the 23rd this year, nearly double the number who arrived in the whole of 2020. And it's also probably more than double the number that arrived in the Norman invasion of 1066. I mean, that was measured in the thousands. What we have here is over 10,000 people arriving. On September the 6th this year, Sky News reported that 1,000 people reached the UK, a single day record. In 2020, a total of 8,410 people were detained in small boat incidents. The Albanian Detention Centre, part of the new Nationality and Borders Bill, is the latest proposal from the Home Secretary, who has vowed to make illegal immigration across the Channel unviable. And she's been vowing this for the last 2 years, and every so often she puts out this idea that she's going to do, but she has yet to actually come through with any of these ideas. In June, she was in discussions with Denmark to share an immigration centre in Africa. Denmark was said to be considering a site in Rwanda, and that would have been brilliant. That would solve the problem, because that would quite clearly be a camp for asylum seekers. It would be providing them asylum in that country. That is a great idea. So why haven't they continued with that? Denmark is probably one of the best countries in Europe for the way that they deal with this issue. They are encouraging Syrian refugees to now go back to Syria now that the war has finished. They look at it as you were here to give you some temporary respite. You weren't moving here permanently. Denmark really is one of the better countries in the West. It obviously doesn't compare to the East, Poland or Hungary, but it's probably the best country in the West to live in, I think, if you're a white man. Ms. Patel previously threatened to turn boats around and send them back to Europe as part of a pushback plan. And of course, that's impossible to do. How are you going to do that? I mean, all they would have to do is just puncture the dinghy and the Navy would then have to go and rescue them. However, French politicians branded the Home Secretary a clown, while Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin claimed any action to send migrant boats back would be illegal. He said France will not accept any practice that goes against maritime law and will not accept any financial blackmail. Well, Poland seems to be doing well with sending them back into Belarus. There are videos online that have been put out by the official Visegrad Twitter account, which shows the Poles pushing them back into Belarus. They're not going to accept them into Poland. I guess that's because that is on land rather than at sea. At present, most of the migrants who arrive in Kent are initially housed at a former army barracks in Folkestone, which was set on fire in a riot over conditions in January amidst a coronavirus outbreak. That was very grateful of them, wasn't it, to set their accommodation on fire. Asylum seekers are free to come and go from the camp, and adults have an initial interview before being sent to accommodation centres across Britain, paid for by UK taxpayers and provided by private contractors. And of course, what they mean there by accommodation centres is hotels. Many of them are 4-star hotels that are actually being paid for by the UK taxpayer to put these fake asylum seekers in. The migrants are given £37.75 per week for essentials like food, clothes and toiletries while they wait for a decision on their asylum application. And we look at that and we say, well, that's not a lot of money, but it is a lot of money when you look at what the weekly income is in places like Africa or like Syria or Afghanistan. Kent County Council normally takes unaccompanied children into its care. And this is, of course, why so many of the adult fake refugees claim to be children, because they know that they will then be looked after in this way. And I just have to point out, we cannot blame these people for trying to get into Britain. The fault lies with our government for giving them these incentives to come into Britain and for not preventing them. We're not talking about this so that people blame the migrants for coming here. We are talking about this so that people try to encourage the government to change its policies. Earlier this year, the UK and France announced an agreement to more than double the number of police patrolling French beaches. It was the second pledge of its kind in a year in a bid to stop small boats from leaving France. And of course, the French, their heart really isn't in this, is it? Because once they've left France, they're less of a problem for France, are they? So they're quite happy to accept money from us, but there's really not a lot they can do to stop them coming. You have to take that incentive away from them. As part of the deal, the government pledged to give France £54 million to support its efforts to stop small boat crossings, which obviously haven't worked, have they? Because we've got double the number of crossings this year than last year. The French commander in charge of stopping migrants in the Channel has threatened to pull out his men if the UK funds are withheld. In an explosive intervention, General Franz Tavart said that if the Home Secretary goes through with her pledge to cut UK's taxpayer support, he will call off nightly patrols. And this is because after this £54 million was sent originally, Priti Patel then said, and we won't be giving them the other £54 million if we don't see any results. The Gendarmerie is currently mounting nighttime operations to intercept migrants on the French coast, with 130 regulars and reservists working in the Calais area, General Tavart told the BBC. Well, that's not very many, is it? That's only 10% of the people that came over last week in one day. He said, we know the British have threatened to cut their financial support. I'm very clear. If they stop paying for their reservists, I will pull my men. For us, it is a real form of ingratitude. General Tavart added, the proof of our efficiency is that smugglers are now trying to go from the Belgian coast, even the Somme. But that dilutes our resources across the territory. It is like a game of chess where the smugglers always make the first move. In July, Ms. Patel agreed to give France another £54 million. But weeks later, she was reported to have told Tory MPs privately, we have not given them a penny of the money so far, and France is going to have to get its act together if it wants to see the cash. It's payment by results, and we have not seen those results. The money is conditional. Again, the solution to this, for both the French and the English, is to set up a camp in Rwanda, an asylum seekers camp, that anybody that tries to claim asylum in Britain coming over from France where there is no war can be put in the camp in Africa, and they can be looked after there until there is no more war in the country that they claim they've come from. That will solve the problem. You would only get genuine asylum seekers then that were coming, and they would genuinely be looked after in the camp in Rwanda. It could be policed by the British so that there was no chance of the corruption and the crime that often happens in Africa happening within the camp. It would protect the British people from having their country broken into. It would prevent people from making their way through France to try and get to Britain, so it would solve the French problem, and it would solve the problem of fake asylum seekers coming, because it would only be the genuine ones that tried it, and they would be genuinely looked after in Africa. It would solve the problem for everyone. So why don't they do it? Why don't they do it? Why have they set up this sort of half measure here, where they're going to set up a processing centre in Albania? Why have they done that? Why did they not continue with the negotiations with Denmark? Why not, I wonder? Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.